Now that 2 years have passed since the fall of Saddam Hussein, some Iraqi-born activists want to make sure their countrymen and women don't forget what happened during his long and brutal regime. It's called the Iraq Memory Foundation. The project was established a few months before the American invasion of Iraq. It is currently funded by the U.S. government. The Memory Foundation has already begun gathering works of art and archiving millions of documents from Saddam Hussein's Ba'athist regime. Hassam Naimneh is the executive director. He says the foundation hopes soon to begin collecting stories from Iraqis about how they survived or helped the regime. The larger tale will eventually be showcased in a Baghdad museum.
It runs the whole spectrum from the mundane to the traumatic. I'll give you examples of both. A mother has her son is out on a date, and she gets a phone call in the middle of the night that they were taken into custody by no one knows exactly who, but they have vanished, basically. And her frantic scramble to figure out who took them and how to get them out. The way she does it, clearly, is by calling someone who's connected to the regime, and now she owes that someone something. Living in fear, as opposed to living in a society where the rule of law is in place. This is, I'm terming it the mundane, although it's not mundane at all, but it was mundane in Saddam's Iraq. All the way to the traumatic. I mean, examples of a family that one of the sons in that family, in a private setting, uttered a few words of criticism against Saddam Hussein, got reported. The secret police takes him, decapitates him, demolishes his parents' house, and puts the whole family in jail. By inviting such a family to express its suffering, it gets transformed from simply a victim to a witness. I mean, there's quite a bit of empowerment in the act of being able to tell what has happened to you. And every story is unique. Every story is an individual story. But all the stories together end up creating the tapestry of that era of brutality, if you'd like. That was the Saddam era.
One thing about the Ba'athists in Iraq, and this has happened in other totalitarian or fascist regimes, people join the Ba'athist party, some of them, many of them maybe, just to get ahead, what you might call mundane or banal reasons.
You're right, meaning there is an utilitarian nature to joining the party in some instances. But I would say that the Saddam regime was structured in such a way that you are almost coerced at joining. I'll give you the example of a young woman in northern Iraq, in Kurdistan, who at the age of 17 could not finish school. She became a high school dropout and wanted to work in a simple factory that manufactures boxes. In order to do that, she was required to sign a commitment that upon starting her work at the factory, she's going to be writing reports on her fellow workers. I mean, to her, the choice was to do that or not to get the work. So she did it. And from there on, she became an informer. Most people who have participated in the actions of the regime start in matters that are trivial, and then gradually they find themselves implicated, they find themselves complicit in the regime.
So you have vast numbers of, let's say, professors, teachers, professionals who were in the Ba'athist Party or
yes,
somehow associated. You also have people who weren't but who didn't fight against it. What do you want them to do? Is the point to accept responsibility? Is it to look back so that it won't happen again?
Our intent for the time being is not to impose a formula on how to deal with it. We look at other experiences and we see two extreme models, if you'd like. One is the South African model, a model of truth and reconciliation. This is an extreme model of where basically victim and perpetrator have the opportunity of revealing what they have done or gone through and face each other. Another extreme model is far closer to Iraq, is the Lebanese model. A traumatic civil war ends, a page is turned as if nothing has actually happened, and presumably let's move on. This is a model almost of denial. Between these two extremes, we believe, Iraqi society is going to try to find its level of comfort. And our role is clearly to advocate for one that is more towards openness.
The foundation has leased an unusual piece of property to do its work from in Baghdad, over which looms a rather famous sculpture, a monumental depiction of Saddam's arms with swords in each hand crossing.
Yes, actually, our role on this site is not a role of ownership. It's a role of trying to help redefine the meaning of the site, that instead of war and instead of paying tribute to the power of Saddam, to the absolute authority of the state, it basically restores this area, which was actually part of a public park, restores it to society as a place of cultural functions, as a place of entertainment even, but also as a place of reflection.
Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Hassan Naimneh is the executive director of the Iraq Memory Foundation. Some examples of its collection of art can be seen at npr.org.